Good morning.
Wait just one moment, let these people exit the courtroom. All right, you may proceed.
Good morning, may it please the court, my name is Mark Gardner, I represent Ronald Johnson, the appellant. This appeal raises a narrow issue of first impression, simply statutory construction issue. I would submit interpreting Code Section 19.2-128, which prescribes penalties for failure to appear. Mr. Johnson was charged on three felony warrants, felony forgery, uttering, and attempting to obtain by false pretenses. Scheduled for a single preliminary hearing in Fredericksburg General District Court, and he missed that date. Subsequently, he was indicted for three separate counts of failing to appear, each count based on a separate underlying felony charge, which was scheduled for that preliminary hearing. The code section in the issue, 19.2-128B, states any person charged with a felony offense who willfully fails to appear is guilty of a Class 6 felony. The issue that we've raised is whether that legislative enactment makes clear a legislative intent to impose multiple punishments for a single failure to appear at a single court date.
Can I ask you this? Sorry, Chief, go ahead.
What happens if one of the charges is a felony and the other is a misdemeanor?
Well, that's a good question, Your Honor. And I believe that if you look at 19.2-128, it's not so much a definition of the offense of failure to appear as it is prescribing punishments. And I would take the position, I would argue that if there's a felony charge and a misdemeanor charge scheduled on the same date and a defendant fails to appear, then it's in the prosecutor's discretion, essentially, but my position would be that he could be charged with either a felony or a misdemeanor, but not both.
May I ask you this? Your appellate brief has an exhibit, the recognizance bond. Is that anywhere in the trial court record or the court of appeals record?
No, sir, it's not.
Well, as a general rule, we don't receive evidence in the appellate court.
And I'm not going to argue that you should.
But you gave it to us as an attachment and you argued it in your brief.
I did attach it, and I thought and I took the position when I did so that the rule allowed the court to take judicial notice of that document since it was a court document in the underlying proceedings. But I have come to the conclusion that that's an erroneous argument, and I would like to abandon it and focus on what I believe is the more important and the correct argument.
Appreciate your advocacy.
You know, this is a knotty problem. I've actually looked at this several different ways. Suppose you had an appearance at 9 o'clock, an appearance at 11 o'clock, and an appearance at 2 o'clock all on the same day. Would they be three different offenses?
Well, the way I would answer that question is I think it depends on the way you analyze this. Our position is that the legislative enactment is ambiguous, it's unclear, and if that's correct, then you have to, according to Baker, get to the gravamen of the offense. If the gravamen of the offense is, as I maintain, failure to appear, then separate appearances, whether they be on the same day at different times, arguably could be charged as separate failures to appear. And if you look at, obviously Your Honor is well aware this court has struggled, as has the Court of Appeals, with this issue in multiple scenarios. And if you compare the findings, the rulings in those different scenarios, it becomes clear that gravamen of the offense is the controlling criteria. If the gravamen of this offense is Mr. Johnson's failure to appear for a single preliminary hearing in a single court on one day at one time, 1 hour, then our position is that that is a failure to appear. Now, does it not make any difference that there are 3 or 15 charges? Of course it does. That comes into play, I would think, in the court's exercise of discretion at sentencing. How much inconvenience, how much difficulty it caused, but not in terms of the number of offenses. The Court of Appeals actually took the position that there is no ambiguity, that the language a felony, correctly interpreted, means a felony, failure to appear, occurs each time a defendant fails to appear in answer to an individual felony.
Even your focus is not on a felony. And I'm not saying it's wrong, by the way. Your focus is on a failure to appear.
Yes, sir. And I believe that should be the correct focus here. If the court agrees that there is an ambiguity, and I would say, where in 19.2-128 does the legislature make clear, where do they say that it's their intention that each felony charge, or misdemeanor charge for that matter, or all of them cumulatively should carry multiple punishments? They don't. We know that the legislature is well aware of how to say that clearly. That issue was addressed in Therrington, where you have the larceny and the larceny with intent to steal, and the legislature simply added a clear statement that this is a separate and distinct offense. But they've not done that here.
But let me ask you a question.
Why isn't this analogous to the situation where somebody comes into an apartment and says, "Everybody, put your money in the basket," and then he walks out. There are four people in there. Why can the Commonwealth charge them with four robberies as opposed to just one? Because there's only one robbery, right? He walked in the door and just said, "Everybody, put your money in the basket."
Yes, sir.
But four charges could come out of that if there are four people in there.
My answer to that, Your Honor, is that it's the gravamen of the offense. And robbery is a good illustration of what I'm talking about. The gravamen of the offense of robbery is the putting in fear of the individual victim by a threat of force or violence.
Well, can you say the gravamen here is not showing up for a specific felony at a specific point in time?
Well, that's a question for this court to resolve, but my position...
I'm just asking, why wouldn't they be exactly analogous?
Well, because in the robbery situation, respectfully, you have individual persons who are the subject of the threat and who are put in a position of fear.
As opposed to individual felonies for which you have not appeared. What's the difference?
I would say as opposed to an individual court proceeding which is disrupted because of the failure to appear. My position is that the gravamen of the offense is the failure to appear and the disruption and inconvenience that's caused by that failure to appear, not the number of charges which required the appearance.
Can I follow up with a question about misdemeanors? When you sign the back of the misdemeanor arrest form and you say, "I promise to appear," and the summons is there on the document, and you have two misdemeanors. Those are two separate judicial commands. Neither is dependent upon the other. Why wouldn't, in that situation, if you blow off the hearing and general district court on those two, why wouldn't they produce, by definition, two commands, two violations, and thus two failures to appear? And if that were true, how could it not be the same for felonies?
There certainly is an argument that that's the case, and that's what led me to belatedly attach as an exhibit the recognizance order of this case. But I've come to the conclusion and respectfully argue that that's not the controlling issue. If the court accepts that this statute is ambiguous, that it's unclear as to the legislative intent, then it's the function of the court to interpret it and determine the gravamen of the offense. And whether it's two summons signed individually as a result of the same conduct or same act with the same court appearance, or whether it's two or more felony warrants which require an appearance on the same date, time, and place before the same tribunal, it's still the gravamen of the offense, respectfully, is not appearing, and the inconvenience and associated problems that failure to appear causes.
So you have two separate legal documents, for two different legal reasons commanding you to appear, but you can violate both and only be prosecuted for one.
Let me answer that with an analogy. The court has distinguished in drug cases possession of drugs at one locale at one time and the same individual in possession of drugs at his home at a remote distance. Warrants issued for both offenses, and ultimately the argument was made that it's one offense. You can't impose multiple punishments for that. Well, the distinction made by the courts was the gravamen of the offense is the possession. These are distinct and individual possessions. If I were driving home today and got stopped by an officer who wrote me a summons, and I drove 10 miles further and got another summons, even if I was still in the same jurisdiction and even if I conveniently was given two court days, there would be a stronger argument that these are intended to be separate commands to appear. If I got stopped and got a ticket for a taillight out and speeding from the same officer, same time, same basic act of driving, same court date, same location, respectfully, there's nothing in the legislature, in the legislative enactment, that would indicate an intent to impose multiple punishments for that failure to appear. I think if you look at comparing some of the cases that the courts have addressed on this issue is instructive. The AC case interpreting possession of any firearm by a convicted felon addresses the gravamen of the offense and finds that possessing multiple firearms on a single occasion is one offense. But possessing the same firearm on multiple occasions results in multiple offenses and multiple penalties. That's Baker. If you say that and don't think about it, it sounds very similar. In fact, you could argue that possessing one single firearm is a more compelling argument for single punishment than possessing multiple firearms. But if you analyze it the way this court has, isolating or recognizing the gravamen of the offense, then Baker is saying possession is the gravamen of the offense, and that has occurred on multiple occasions in this case. First when the weapon was stolen, then when there was an attempt to sell it, and then later when there was an actual sale or delivery, as opposed to the multiple firearms in a single locale, single possession. Same analysis has taken place with drug offenses. And the distinction between those cases and the robbery brandishing cases, I would submit, is that the gravamen of the offense in those cases, robbery and brandishing a firearm, is the placing in fear an individual victim. So, in sum, our position is that the statute is ambiguous, requires interpretation. The process of doing so demands that the court identify the gravamen of the offense, and if the court agrees that the gravamen of the offense in this case is the failure to appear, then it follows that one punishment is appropriate for a single failure to appear on a single court date on charges that are all related and arose out of the same incident.
Well, counsel, Judge Atlee says in the opinion for the Court of Appeals, Johnson's failure to appear hampered the Commonwealth's ability to proceed on multiple charges. How do you address that? I mean, you've talked about this issue from several different perspectives, but you haven't addressed that specific.
Well, respectfully, I think it's difficult to address that. It's unquestionable that any failure to appear has the potential to hamper the prosecution. It's not so clear in this case, respectfully, that that's actually what happened. There was an alleged victim in the case involving all three of those underlying warrants. That individual died at a later date. It's not clear from the record when that person passed away. Many months passed between the failure to appear and the indictments for felony failure to appear. He was presumed to be innocent on the underlying charges, and frankly, I don't think whether his failure to appear interfered or not is how this court has to address this issue.
But
it is relevant to punishment.
The hypothetical that she just gave you, though. Suppose you have two charges, and suppose the facts are different from what your facts are. and the witnesses are coming and going, and if they don't, if the guy doesn't show up on the day of trial, the case is going to be over for any number of reasons. The harm to the Commonwealth and to the public is two charges now get deep six, not one, but two. Why isn't that, as Judge Attlee pointed out, a perfectly reasonable reason for having a single unit of prosecution being each underlying charge?
I don't know that I can argue in good conscience that that line of reasoning is unreasonable. I understand it. I'm simply saying that if that were the legislature's intent, it would be easy for them to have said so, and they have not done that. I'm also saying that if you look at this statutory setup with subsections A, B, and C, it's clear that the legislature recognizes that there should be different penalties if the underlying charges are misdemeanors and felonies. And what your Honor is asking me about, respectfully, would be an appropriate consideration at sentencing for the single failure to appear. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Alice Armstrong on behalf of the Commonwealth. Your Honor, we're asking the Court to affirm the Court of Appeals judgment affirming the trial court, and hopefully I can help cut the knot that Your Honor has identified. It's respectfully submitted that the legislature's deliberate use of the singular in prescribing the offense it was defining evinces the clear legislative intent that it applies individually to each underlying charge.
When you say offense is the singular, which are you speaking of, Ms. Armstrong? The willful that willfully fails to appear?
A felony offense.
Say that again.
A felony offense. By saying it is unlawful to willfully fail to appear for a felony offense, that is the use of the singular that this court always presumes that the legislative words are chosen.
But it doesn't say who willfully fails to appear for a felony offense. It says a person charged with a felony offense who willfully fails to appear.
Correct.
Willfully fails to appear.
It does say that. Correct.
So you're saying that if it said felony offenses, then that would evidence that the legislature intended to go with your opposing counsel's argument?
Exactly so. They could have said any felony offenses.
But doesn't that, though, inject a new ambiguity? Because I would read felony offenses as saying, well, you've got to have two of them before you can have a felony. That might be an absurd or bordering on an absurd interpretation. But nonetheless, it becomes ambiguous in a way that A and any might be less ambiguous.
Well, again, I think taken together, A instead of any and offense is the singular. And, for example, in Hines, which I found it a little bit ironic, and obviously I'm parachuting into this case, but there were five convictions which no one really questioned for forgery of a public document because he signed five things. I don't think the statute is ambiguous, but even if it is, I mean, what this court was getting at in Baker is when there's the problem with when we find an ambiguity or when it's ambiguous is when we can't define when one offense ended and the next one began. So in Baker, this court said, well, we know when these three offenses occurred because they were clearly on three separate dates. That's not a problem. In Kelso, we can identify three separate victims, even though it's one transaction, which I think touches on Your Honor's robbery analogy. Same thing. Three charges of brandishing, even though it was one event, because there were three people there who were put in fear. The same with the drug distribution charges where we have separate caches. For example, the person who arrives to deliver the drugs that he's specifically intending to distribute right then And then when we go to his house and we find a separate cache, well, he must have had a separate intent because he didn't bring that with him to sell it. He was holding that back for a future sale. So that's a separate intent. And the same with the drive-by shooting in Stevens.
So you're looking at the intent to hold four, to rob four people, the intent to possess the gun at separate occasions, the intent to only not appear for the uttering, and the other two just happened. I don't know if intent fits this code section. The intent that you're laying out.
Well, and then forgive me, because that's not really the point that I'm trying to drill down on. The point that I'm trying to drill down on is when we can identify very specifically a separate violation of the statutory prescription, be it by individual pornographic images, be it by separate drug caches, be it by individual victims that we can separately identify, be it by multiple shots that we can separately identify fired from a vehicle, out of building, etc. When we can separately identify a violation of that offense, and here we can, and we know that because the indictment separately identified the felony charge for which the defendant failed to appear. And so my suggestion to the court is, it's not ambiguous, but even if the court finds it is ambiguous, we can separately identify. I think that language is, there was some nice language in Chairs, which I'm not immediately calling to mind. But when we are able to separately identify and pull out a violation of that statute, then that's not multiplicious.
Why isn't this more like AC? How do we distinguish the multiple firearms in AC and the multiple failures, the one failure to appear with the underlying charges here?
Well, I think what we're getting at in AC is we didn't want a felon to be armed, and whether he's armed with one or 100 doesn't really change the danger that the General Assembly was trying
so
to get at.
So may I insert, we don't want the felon to fail to appear? And so if it's the same day, the same time, multiple charges, why isn't that the AC analysis? We don't want him to fail to appear.
But we don't want him to not answer for each individual charge. He's committed separate offenses against in the words of the indictment, the peace and dignity of the Commonwealth. And he should be required to appear to answer for each of those charges individually. There was a nice turn of phrase, although I don't think the court needs to look at cases outside of the Commonwealth, but there was a nice turn of phrase in the Richter case that said, we don't exalt the court's scheduling over the defendant's obligation to appear to answer for each charge. So to circle back to the Chief Justice's question, if the times were on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday for whatever reason, because that was more convenient for the court's scheduling, that certainly would give rise to three separate offenses. And so then I guess part of my argument to the court would be, do we want to be down in the weeds on each individual thing, or is it clear that if you have three felony charges, you're obligated to appear and answer for all three? Again, this court said in Phelps, when we were defining a person, that indefinite article A can mean any, but it also can mean each. And if it means each felony charge, then certainly that language evinces an intent that he should answer for all three.
If indeed that's the case, then it is ambiguous. If it can mean A or each, it can mean any or each, you've just brought ambiguity into the argument.
Well, I think the use of the singular denotes each in this context. But again, even if it doesn't, even if it is ambiguous, then I think we go back to Kelso and Stevens, and indeed Baker. If we can identify a separate offense, and here we can, because that there were three separate felony charges. There's no dispute that there were three different charges and three warrants. We can identify that he failed to appear to answer for the charge of forgery. We can identify separately that he failed to appear for the charge of uttering. And we can identify separately that he failed to appear for the charge of attempted larceny by false pretenses. So it's really not different than the situation in Stevens, where he fired two shots from his car at another moving car. That's two counts of firing at an occupied vehicle, because we could discern there were two shots fired. And it's also two counts of firing from a moving vehicle, because, again, we were able to discern that there were two shots fired. And likewise in Kelso, we're able to discern that there were three victims of that brandishing. And so I think, really, no matter how we slice this up, it comes back to, we're able to say when the offense started and finished because we're able to discern what he failed to appear for. And it's not a question of the convenience of the court's scheduling. So if he failed to appear at 9, that's a charge. If he failed to appear at 11, that's a charge. If he failed to appear at 2, that's a charge. Likewise, if he failed to appear on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, those are three separate charges. And so I don't think he gets the windfall, when he's the wrongdoer, of a bulk discount, because for scheduling purposes, partly for the convenience of the witnesses, that he gets a discount because he happened to have one time that he failed to appear for to answer for three separate felonies. And, I mean...
May I circle back and ask about AC? Both of you all commented on it. This is the Court of Appeals opinion in 1999?
It is.
What an appeal to us, was it? I mean, that's... The AC opinion, if we're talking about the same case as the 1999 Court of Appeals opinion, Judge Overton issued, is that
correct?
Well, if we haven't endorsed it and we haven't affirmed it, it has no more authority here than the Court of Appeals opinion that's presently being reviewed by us.
I understand, Your Honor, and there are quite a few cases in here that maybe we don't need to focus our attention on. I would focus our attention on Stevens, Kelso, and Baker. I think that, and Phelps, because Phelps tells us what we're supposed to be doing in terms of the statutory construction. But I think that Stevens and Kelso really answer the question, which is, if we can figure it out, if we know where one started and one finished, and we do, because there were three separate charges here, then that's the answer to the question. And he should be called upon to answer for all three failures to appear. And it's not just the convenience of the scheduling. It is the convenience of the witnesses. It's in the record that one witness had already been inconvenienced. I think by the time we got to the argument on the motion, had already been three times and was going to have to come back again. But also the infringement on the Commonwealth's ability to go forward. And obviously that's not in every case, but I think that's really what the General Assembly is getting at. People need to be there when everything is ripe and the Commonwealth can go forward. And if you're not there, and if you're the person impeding that, you're liable for each charge that you impeded. If the court doesn't have additional questions.
I do have an additional question. Let's go back to the first week of criminal law.
Yes, Your Honor.
Remember mens rea and actus reus?
Yes.
Of course you do. You know more criminal law than I know. How many actus reuses are involved in this particular crime?
Well, if the question is just simply coming to the courthouse, then one. But if the act is failing to meet your obligation to come and answer for each felony charge,
failure to appear, how many
for
how
each
many,
felony
many,
charge?
So the actus reus is I didn't appear.
Right. But
one.
There's one not coming to the courthouse, but the actus reus, I think, is not appearing as required for a felony charge. And he did not appear for a felony charge three times.
So when you're talking about the the brandishing a weapon or firing a weapon, each time you pull the trigger, there's a separate actus reus.
Certainly for the shooting.
Yeah.
Not for the brandishing, because I've only presented the firearm the one time.
Okay.
So it's one act, but as to three victims, I'm sorry.
You take one sniper rifle and you shoot one shell through two skulls. How many murders do you have?
Two.
You pull
and
out a gun.
Under the capital murder statutes, I might have three.
You pull out a gun on three people and rob three. It's one act of pulling out the gun, but it's three robberies.
Correct. It's one presentation of the it's a single presentation of the firearm.
Well, isn't that...
That puts someone in fear, so you put three people in fear.
Isn't that the first hypothetical, where you go in, you pull out a gun, and you say, everybody put your money into the basket?
Correct. And that's four robberies if there are four people there putting their money in the basket. Unless the court has additional questions, we ask the court to affirm.
Thank you. Call the next case.